Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. We are back for the whirlwind grass court season, which is quite literally up and running. This window of the year is definitely a sprint and not a marathon. The first of 4 weeks of British grass court action leading up to Wimbledon is in the books, and this was last week's Surbiton Trophy, where two-time Wimbledon champion Andy Murray defeated Yuri Rodionov to win the ATP Challenger Tour event, and Yanina Wickmeyer edged Katie Swan for the W100 singles title. Wickmeyer actually did the double. She teamed up with Sophie Chang for the win in the women's doubles final over Alicia Barnett and Olivia Nichols, with the Brits beating the Aussies on the men's side as Liam Brody and Johnny O'Mara teamed up to get it done over Alexei Popperin and Alexander Vukic. Amidst the chaos and the tennis and the drama that is week one of grass season, two 24-year-olds who made big moves on this surface last season took some time to sit down and chat for the podcast. The first of those is Belgium's Zizou Bergs, who started this British summer of tennis strongly with a run to the semi-finals in Surbiton. Zizou had next to no grass court experience when he came through qualifying last year to win the ATP Challenger Tour event in Ilkley, earning himself a Wimbledon main draw wildcard in the process. Over the next 20 minutes, Zizou discusses what it's like to face a Brit at the championships, how the aim to break into the world's top 100 and the loss of his grandfather have impacted him, how he feels about returning to grass as a defending champion, and much more. He talks incredibly candidly, and it's a really insightful conversation with a player that you'll be hearing much more from in the future. So here is Zizou Bergs. Zizou, welcome back to the UK. Semis now. So you've played three matches. You've won all three in straights. So how are you feeling being back on the grass?
Obviously, it's great again because I've known a very good season last year on the grass. I mean, I only played one tournament with a lot of wins, and the rest was not really a lot of wins. And when I arrived here, I mean, I didn't have any practice on grass before Saturday. And on Saturday, I can tell you, I was not feeling it. It took like two practices to get one return in, or maybe two. So that comeback wasn't too good here. But I think from end of the first set in the first round, I was feeling the tennis again, the grass tennis. And from that moment, we have just keep building as well as in practice as in the matches. And I'm like very comfortable again. I feel that my game suits the grass a lot, and I feel like it comes like more natural on the grass, the wins, the key points. So just a kind of flow, I feel like.
That's awesome. With less than ideal prep as well, to not have dropped a set yet, that's pretty good going. So last year, let's throw it back. Was that your first proper year competing on grass last year, or had you played on it before?
I mean, I don't know if you can even say proper.
Okay.
But it was definitely, I mean, 5 years before that, I played Wimbledon Juniors and Roehampton before.
Right.
But at a completely different forehand. And I couldn't manage to play well on the grass because of that forehand. Also, mentally, I was kind of fragile back there. So, yeah, I was playing Poznan on clay, and I lost on Friday. And we took a long car drive to Hertogenbosch. And then I won my first round, like in three sets, the day after. And then I got kicked badly from Ebden, who played really well on grass. And then I was like, oh man, this grass, I mean, as in juniors, it doesn't suit me, right? And then we started practicing a lot during that week in Hertogenbosch with Ruben. And we went to Ilkley. It was also like, it was Ruben's last match in Ilkley. He was hoping to get the wildcard qualities for Wimbledon, and we were at the table, and he said to me, we're playing tomorrow, and we were having a laugh because it was first round qualies. Yeah, I had to beat him, luckily. And then, I won my second round in qualies, and it was a really good match, and I felt like, okay, the grass tennis is coming. And before I knew it, I just won the tournament. Like, everything came so fast. And then I got granted like the wild card Wimbledon main draw, which was incredible. And everybody was asking me, is this your favorite surface now? I was like, I guess so, because I'm playing so good on it. And then like amazing experience in Wimbledon. And this year again, it confirms a little bit that my game suits well on this surface. And I just hope to continue growing on it.
you covered a lot of ground there, so let's go in a bit more detail. So Ilkley, it was kind of like a mini slam for you because you came through qualifying, then you won all the main draw matches, so that's like 7 match wins. Yeah. I remember watching you in qualifying for that event, and then as you touched on, the wild card for Wimbledon came as a result of winning the event, correct? Did you know that was on the line at the time when you were playing?
Yeah, I don't know when someone, I think even before the tournament, someone told me that if you win one of those, it's an unwritten rule. And I think I really got tensed from the semis. Like from the semis, I was thinking, oh man, I'm so close to that wild card. And I got so tight in that semis, even though I won quite comfortable and I was so stressed for the finals. And then in the finals, yeah, that was just the biggest relief ever. I feel like whenever I won that match, and then I got the confirmation that it was that I had it, and I was obviously super happy about it.
Didn't you save a match point in the final against Jack Sock? Do you remember that point?
Yeah, I did an approach which hit the net, and he got like an easy forehand, and then he would definitely turn around, and I see him turning around, and I don't know, you have this thing that every first forehand he turned around, he would go inside out. So even at the net, I was like, okay, I'm going to choose that side. And I hit an incredible volley. And then I felt like, okay, the luck is here, is on my side. And I just keep pushing. But I also have a lot of confidence in tie breaks. So I just know how to play aggressive in that and still, you know, being tough. And then I just went for it. And luckily, it fell on my side.
Unreal effort. And then you did go on and you played Wimbledon, as you said. Now you played Jack Draper in the first round. I don't know if you heard, Jack's not able to play grass season this year.
I read it yesterday.
Because of injury, which is a shame because the two of you were in such good form at that point in time. Now on this podcast previously, I've spoken to Brits about the experience of playing at Wimbledon. I've not spoken to anyone about the experience of playing a Brit at Wimbledon. So what was that experience like playing Jack on, it was a big court, was it court 12?
Yeah, like with one big stand.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, just already the days before, I've never experienced Wimbledon in that way. And I felt like, okay, this is the superlative of tennis. The atmosphere is just, it's kind of unreal. I mean, I love like energy crowd. I love a lot of show like New York, for example. But this is just something that doesn't exist in any other tournament. You cannot even compare close to it. And then, you know, you play on a big court and it was, I could do good points and I just barely heard something. And then he would do good points and like they were going, at a certain point they were going nuts, like especially in the tie break. And it hurt a little bit when he did that good passing, for example, and I just hear the crowd and I'm like, because like a few moments before I did like a diving volley.
I remember that exact point.
Yeah, I never did it before, never even tried it. And at that point I did it and I was like, what's going on here? And I was like, to the bench, come on, give me that. And it was just like so silent. So, you know, the Brits are nice fans, definitely. But they're definitely Brit favored, which is completely fine. But I just love that it's there's a lot of crowd that is always sold out. So hard to get the tickets. It just means that what the event means to it.
Sure, that's really interesting. So it is tough out there when the crowd are for the opponent, even if they're not necessarily against you, they're for the opponent. So in those moments, can you find the fire from within yourself or do you struggle with that a little bit?
No, I definitely feel fire. I mean, if your first Grand Slam, I think any Grand Slam, you will be fired. You want to try so hard to get the win on your side. But I just cannot say that it wouldn't hurt me if he had such a good passing after a solid approach. You hear the crowd going nuts. That always hurts a little bit, but it's not different than any others.
Sure. No, I felt for you, I've got to say, in that moment, because that was an outrageous shot. Yeah. I remember it clear as day. Okay, so that was last year, meaning this year you've come into grass season for the first time with something to defend because you've got the Ilkley title. So how is your expectation? How is your mindset? How is everything different or not so different compared to last year?
I feel like I'm a rookie again. I feel like I honestly checked twice if I wouldn't take any point, which my ranking would be, because as you take it or not, even if it's your favorite surface, you're playing like a very high level players. They're all so high ranked. A lot of them are really tall, serve big. There is not always a lot in your hands. So I'm aware that I can lose 3 times first round. that can happen. Like even Luke Savilu was really good in doubles, comes here, plays singles, a very tough player. Like, mm-hmm. It's very tough to beat them. Also White House first round. These guys, they know how to play on grass. And I like grass, and I think it's my surface, my preferred surface, but still I'm an all-round player. I can play on clay, I can play on hard court, so I'm not that typical grass player either. I'm not doing serve volley all the time or whatsoever. So I'm aware that I can also lose a lot, and I'm aware that I can lose a lot of points here. So I will just be happy if I can make it out of here like in an average points. It's not that I put everything on my grass season like maybe other players. Mm-hmm. I know I can do well on all surfaces, but that doesn't mean that there is always pressure. Like you're gonna lose a lot of points. I think at the moment I'm dealing well with that in the past, but it's definitely still something tricky, I feel like.
Okay, that's cool that you have that outlook, because I feel like some players can really understandably get hung up over the ranking and a little bit tight because of that. So over the last year, and you say your game translates well across surfaces, how much has the top 100 been a motivating factor for you? Because you're not far off top 100 at the moment. You're top 150. I think you've been as high as 112 in the world. So how much has that been a motivation for you the past 12 months?
If you say that, I feel like I'm getting an emotional side in my mouth,
right?
Because I'm just getting sick of it, honestly. I want that top 100 really bad, and if everybody is talking about it, and I want it, I'm thinking a lot about it, but yeah, it didn't come as fast as I hoped for or I thought for, because I had a period, especially after Davis Cup last year, where I had so little to defend. I came out finals in Mallorca, I played Davis Cup, and then I went to Mets where I injured myself. But all that period I just didn't have anything to defend, and I got injured, I was out, I started again, I was not playing great, mentally not great. So that was a possible like momentum I could take. Beginning of the year there were a lot of momentum I could take, I didn't use it. So I think that this year has been really challenging. I'm taking a lot of losses really bad. I took it all, like I said to my coach, you come higher and I feel like if you lose, there is more at stake, I think is the right word. Like,
yeah, correct.
You can win a lot, but you can also, I feel like you can lose a lot. As first rounds in ATPs, like great momentum, first time, main draw, let's take that opportunity. You lose close. Davis Cup, you lose close. First round Australia, you lose close, which I didn't think it was really that fair, but that's all right. And mentally I started to drain, and I think also before the grass season I called my psychologist and I was like, I feel like I'm not doing things well. I feel like I'm taking a lot of personal when things doesn't go right. And I'm very eager to learn, and I was listening podcasts about mental, even though I work very intense with a psychologist. And I spoke about it, and we came to an agreement, consensus, like the most important thing is to keep focused on improving and tasks, what you have to do to improve. And I feel like from the stage before the grass season, I think this is something I really want to work on, is everything to focus on that point. Obviously, you're going to be stressed because you want to win or you want to win tournaments. But I feel like I want to compare myself more on how well did I do the tasks. And I hope this can change a little bit my mental health state, not to suffer so much from losses, because I feel like it's not worth it.
Well, you have a really mature outlook. It's impressive. I want to touch on a couple of things. By the way, are you okay for time if we keep talking a bit longer?
Yeah,
is that okay?
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
So in terms of, let's say first of all, so the ranking, you said you've been hung up a little bit over the top 100 ranking. Does that affect you just between matches, or are you actually thinking about that during matches when you're on court?
I've had periods where I was thinking about it, not the top 100, but the points.
Okay.
I was pushing myself so hard, and I would get very angry after matches because I was like, okay, another zero or only 10 points. And reflecting on that is again something that makes it more sense to me to focus on the tasks. And I've heard it tons of times. The more you develop, the results will come. Like there is no chance you're going to develop great, but the results won't come. But even though you hear it all the time, it's not always easy to focus on the right things, because you hear a lot of things. So that's always like on what are you going to focus. I feel like that's very important.
So sometimes do you think you can hear the right advice, but you can hear it too much, so it doesn't have the right impact
voilà.
On you?
Sometimes it's nice to hear it from someone else,
okay.
Even though they might say the same, but it's just something fresh. And then to talk about it with the persons you know, and if you come to consensus, then it can be, again, like a kind of a fire thing, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so you mentioned you've got a psychologist.
Yeah.
How long have you worked with a psychologist for? And was that your initiative? Did you decide to do that, or did someone advise you to?
I was working with someone else, and we came to a point where he said, I think it's better for you to work with that guy, which is Gert-Jan. He was at the Federation that time. And I was a little bit down that my psychologist said, I think it's better for you to work with him. But it came out really much better because he was kind of young for a psychologist. He was only 30 years old. He was there at the Federation. And from the moment we started working, we had an incredible record. I cannot tell you exactly the record anymore, but it was going to a 25-24. Like, from the 25 matches, we won 24 matches, which is
wow.
Insane. Like, he would travel with me like 10 weeks a year at least. So that came out really, really strong, and he's still traveling every year like 10 weeks. And yeah, we're definitely growing. There are still things we have to learn, but I think also on the men's side, we're developing. We're not only talking, we're training. We're training, we're growing in matches, so the training can, like, again, the right focus. If you're not in the right focus, then the training doesn't work. So we're definitely growing, and it's a little bit also with the celebrations of the arrow. Like, if I do that, it means it was a great mental match. And I feel like every time it was a great match mentally, we can celebrate this, because it's very hard, actually, the mental part. But I'm just also happy we're growing on that. And it's a matter of growing in the bad moments and in the good moments, so we can come out really strong and get in that top 100 before we even know it.
We saw the arrow today. So today was a good mental day, right?
Definitely.
Brilliant.
Definitely.
Okay, we love that. Now, you mentioned the struggles with the ranking in your mind. I checked with you beforehand that there is another struggle that you've had, I believe, over the past year, where you lost someone close to you. Who was that, and how has that affected you and your tennis over the past year?
That was my grandfather. We knew he got really sick right before Christmas. And I had a talk with him one-on-one, because obviously we knew he was not going to be there for long, and he knew it. And we had a talk, and he said, like, I'm so happy, and if there is just something I still want, is to see you in that top 100. So that's why I went full for it, and you know, all focus on that. And if I had wins, I would text him, like, this one is for you, let's keep going. And then when I was in America, it was horrible. I was in Miami, and he would always text me beforehand, like, saying good luck and this of that, and he didn't do it that match. And after the match, I lost to Kokkinakis with 3 match points, and my parents called me after FaceTime, and they normally never do that. And we were just talking, I was very down. And they came up with that message, and it hurt it so much. That, and also being in America, I was there for 5-6 more weeks. And we decided I didn't come home for the funeral, so I had to follow it online and all of that. And from that moment on, I was just talking to my grandfather in a different way, because he would always give me rational advice. If some things wouldn't go well, I would go on a Sunday to his home, talk about it. And whenever I got in a difficult moment or difficult decisions, I would just talk to him, like, what would he do, and try to pick up some signs. And I also said it in the funeral, that I just hope he keeps talking to me like he did when he was there. And for now, and he's been doing that also with the win in Tallahassee. Before, I wanted to go home before the tournament because I was struggling, mentally not well. But then I got a dream during the night, which was very intense. And I would wake up and I was like, okay, decision is made. I'm going to play Tallahassee. And coincidentally, I win that tournament pretty easy score wise so yeah, I'm very grateful for those lessons as well. And then again, I just keep hoping he's gonna keep me giving me those lessons.
Clearly he knew that you would make it. I know you haven't made it yet, but I think he knew that you would make it and will be there in spirit when you do.
Yeah.
So Zizou, there have been challenges over the last year. How much of an encouragement then, and I won't keep you too much longer, by the way, but you didn't like the way Australia ended, but that was the first time you'd qualified for the main draw of a Grand Slam. How much encouragement did you take from that?
Zero.
None at all?
Incredible, but so little.
Wow, how come?
It's incredible, yeah. As I say, I would pick up losses really bad because I feel like I wanted to get there so bad and I feel like I have the level. I feel like I have the level definitely to beat top 100 now. But the results have to be there. So every time I would lose, I would take very little positives with it. So that was definitely like bad from my side.
Where are you now compared to then in terms of how you digest results and how much confidence you do take from results?
Because of that realization before the grass season, I feel like it can change a lot. But I cannot say that I've done better afterwards. So at that part, it's been a challenging year. Luckily, the last weeks I've been not playing too much. So I've had the time to realize things. I've had the time to talk about it. I've had the time to create consensus with the team. So let's see where we go after. I just hope that the focus is kind of the base and the results definitely not going to take for granted. So. When it doesn't go well, I think there is a challenge how I'm going to react the next times.
Okay, so do you think sometimes when it comes to improvement, it's knowing when to take time off as opposed to training more?
I think the training has to be there. You have to train, you have to improve. But I feel like the competition, you can take a little bit time off. Luckily, I've got injured. In that luck, I've had some weeks off where I could be with the team, I could be at home, I could balance a lot of things. I feel like there is a written path for you and it will come on your way. Like if you want it really bad, it will come in which kind of matter too. It's a little bit, the manifesting, you get what you want. I believe in those things and I've had some time off, so let's see what again, like with the issue of next week, what I'm gonna play, it will say whenever the time there is.
Okay, only a couple more questions because I think Katie Bolter just won, so we might be about to get swamped. But we got to talk about Ruben Bemelmans. This marks a year since you've been working with him. How did that come about? Because just over a year ago, he was still playing. And let's start there. How did that come about, you working with him?
We were looking to fill in some weeks because I had a team. We were looking to fill it up a little bit because my coach was working with another player and traveling. So the federation coach came up with some suggestions and Ruben was one of them. And he contacted Ruben because he was still playing. And he said like, yeah, I feel like you can ask him the question. So he was out for a tournament in Nottingham. And we had a video call and I just asked him the question, hey, you wanna be my coach? I know you're still playing, but maybe in a halfway, because it was a very ethical question too. But he already said to me like, I want to be your coach whenever I quit. He was already helping me a little bit in practices and stuff. And I felt like in the practices, he wanted to coach more than he wanted to play himself. So he agreed to it. And it started with picking up the same tournaments where he would play and he would coach me. That didn't take long because a few weeks after he decided he was going to quit. So from Ilkley, where I beat him the first round qualies, he became my coach together with the team. But then, unfortunately, the other coach from the team, he didn't continue with us. So he became my full-time coach after Wimbledon.
You're telling me that you retired Ruben Bemelmans. You beat him and you asked him to coach you, so it's on you.
I definitely beat him. I definitely beat him and retired him.
Okay.
It was very difficult at the match itself. But afterwards, it does make a lot of sense after all. Because his first slam as a player main draw was Wimbledon. And now, as a coach, it's Wimbledon. His player's first slam in main draw is me, which I did in Wimbledon.
Okay.
So it all, like the circle was full, we always say.
Full circle. Okay. So that's Ruben, and he's with you now. very finally and quickly, goals for grass season with Ruben, and how does he feel about your game since you've been working with him?
Like, at this stage, he thinks big of my game. We agree that my game is top 100 worthy. We know where to improve in practices. We know how to improve as a team, which is also very important that we keep growing as a team. And the goals for a grass season, honestly, I've not set any goals. For me, the goals is the right focus, the right mindset. I think that those for me are the biggest goals, especially with a lot of defending. I feel like I have to put the focus on the tasks and I see where we go eventually. I have to play qualis this year on Wimbledon. I think it's also already very tough to qualify. So I think that's a big goal, to just qualify for Wimbledon.
Well, whatever happens, semis or better as a guarantee for your first tournament, not bad at all. So, Zizou, you've been awesome. Thanks for taking the time to talk, and all the best for the rest of grass season and the rest of 2023.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks once again to Zizou. A pleasure to listen to him. And now you get to hear from a Surbiton finalist, GB's Katie Swan, who only missed out on the trophy in a final set tiebreak after defeating last year's Wimbledon semi-finalist Tatiana Maria on the way to Sunday's final showdown. Katie has experienced some of her best career moments during the grass court season, including qualifying for the Wimbledon main draw in 2021 and beating former US Open champion Sloane Stephens in 2022. She was in extreme demand all week in Surbiton, and I was very grateful to her for taking 10 minutes or so to discuss her grass court memories, the biggest factors in her recent progress, her America-based family, and more. So it's time to hear from Katie Swan. Katie, talking after you've just made the final of a grass court event for the first time with a very good win over Lily Miyazaki. First of all, just talk about the week so far here in Surbiton. How have you found it?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been the ideal start for me to the grass season. I was feeling really good coming into this week, actually. I had a couple of great weeks of training at the NTC and felt confident coming here, and just wanted to try and produce the same level that I was doing in practice into the matches. And yeah, I'm really happy I've been able to do that so far.
You have a really impressive level against Lily today, only dropped one game. I was courtside for the last time you played Lily. That was in Glasgow. I'm sure you remember that match because you picked up an injury during that match. So was this a bit of a healing win for you today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, playing Lily, I knew it was always going to be tough last time. Yes, I picked up an injury, but she also was playing great and she ended up winning that tournament, so it shows how good she is as well. And I just felt like today I just needed to take care of my own stuff, and I'd accepted that if she played too well and she beat me again, then too good. But I thought I pretty much played a faultless match, so yeah, I'm happy that I was able to come through that one.
That's cool that you had that acceptance going into it. I might be wrong here, but at the time you played her last time in Glasgow, was Billie Jean King Cup finals, was that on the line? Because I wondered if that made the situation tougher.
Yeah, I think I was trying to kind of prove myself a bit by playing that week. I wasn't actually that fit going into it, so it was a bit of a borderline decision from me, but I really wanted to show that I was ready to go to Billie Jean King finals, and I wasn't in the end. So you know, but you live and you learn, and I got a long pre-season instead, and I started the year off great in Sydney at United Cup. So you kind of just have to take things as they come in tennis, and yeah, I'm happy with where I'm at now.
For sure. Was there a little hiccup in Australia, first round of qualifying in Melbourne?
Yeah, a couple of days before my qualifying match I actually hurt my hamstring in practice. It was such a draining week in Sydney. It was so much fun, but you know, it was really, really long days, and I think that just took a toll on my body and didn't quite have enough recovery in time for Australian Open. But again, you know, these things happen and you just gotta work through it.
Have you been able to have that perspective across the whole past 12 months? Because I know there have been some tougher moments with injury, and in the moment I guess maybe it's harder to keep that mindset.
Yeah, it's tricky for sure. Post Wimbledon last year I kind of had a reset, and I was really disappointed after I lost first round there. I had a lot of chances, and I just did a lot of kind of reflection on, I was being way too hard on myself, and my goal for the rest of the year was just whatever happens to just be kinder to myself and keep putting in that work every single day. And I ended up having some of my best results after that, but I was also picking up niggles here and there and having to miss multiple weeks between tournaments. But I kept going with the work, and even over the last few months I didn't have a good clay court season in terms of results, but I kept working hard, and I just wanted to take something out of that clay court season. For me, that was improving physically, and I've noticed a massive difference already coming onto the grass with how strong I feel. And so despite the rough last couple of months, I'm just happy with where I'm at, where I am now, and I'm really grateful to my team as well, because I wouldn't be able to be playing this well and on grass without, you know, the constant work that we've all been putting in together.
Okay, since you've mentioned your team, let's bring Alex Ward into it, because you've not been working with him for, in fact, you tell me, when did you start working
with him? We started together, it was pre-season of 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest improvements you've seen in your game since working with him?
I think the great thing with Alex is he's so calm, and it's a real collaboration, the work that we do together. You know, everything we do is it's a conversation with each other, and he lets me bring my thoughts to the table, and we talk about everything on the practice court. And for me, it's also been great to have him as a hitter, because obviously he played such a high level himself that I really felt like the benefits from hitting with him a lot has gotten me ready to play against these girls on the tour. And yeah, I think he's just a great personality for me to be around, because he's so calm. I can be a bit stressed sometimes, and he kind of levels that out, and it's just great to travel with someone that's young, and we have a lot of fun as well.
So just for people that might not be so much aware of what the hitter does, is he like mirroring the game styles that you're going to be playing against on a particular day, or does he just give you the ball as hard as possible?
No, yeah, he can do a bit of everything. Like yesterday before my match with Tatiana Maria, I got him to slice every single ball in the warm-up, and it was horrible for me. I was getting so mad, but he was like, no, I'm going to keep doing it, because that's literally what you're going to get in the match. And then the day before that, when I played Ocean Dodden, he was absolutely teeing the ball as hard as he could in the warm-up. So, yeah, he's very adaptable, to be honest, and it's great.
That's what you need. You also need to be adaptable as a player with the different surfaces you play on, hard, clay, grass. And this is the trickiest transition, really, clay onto grass. So do you remember your first experiences of grass? Because as a Brit, you'll have seen a little more of it. So when did you first come across it as a surface?
I think it was when I was a junior. I think I played Wimbledon the first time, like 2014, so it would have been that year. But I think grass is really well suited to my game. I always like to have a good serve, and I like to be aggressive from the baseline, and I think I'm really good physically, staying low. And I think it, coming off the clay this year, it really made me realise how well suited I am to grass.
Have you always felt like that from the get-go, or is there anything that you've had to change specifically?
I think I've really gotten stronger physically. I think my legs have been able to take a lot more so far this year. My fitness coach, Jill, she's been really pushing me with all these like low squat jumps, and well, it's horrible, but it burns the legs so much, but then I feel great when I'm playing matches, so all credit to her. I did maybe swear at her a couple of times for the sessions she was making me do, but at least it's paying off.
No pain, no gain, right?
Exactly.
All right, let's talk a little bit more recently then as we close. So last year, I believe you got one of your very best wins over Sloane Stephens on the grass, so she's a multi-time Grand Slam finalist. That wasn't in the UK, that was abroad, which might seem, well, it is a little bit more unusual for a Brit to play abroad when there are other options during the grass season. So what was the thought process over going over to play that tournament, and did it feel different to competing on grass in the UK?
Yeah, so the reason I went was because I'd actually went to Eastbourne and I was ready to sign in for qualies, but because of the wildcard situation with all the other girls that were also in main draw for Wimbledon, I didn't know if I was going to get a wild card for Eastbourne, and the only way to guarantee that I was going to get in a tournament was, I was told that if I went to Germany I could have a wild card there into qualifying. So me and Alex and my brother was with us as well, we just were like, let's go, because I need to get another match at least before Wimbledon. So we hopped on a plane and I played my first match the next day, and we had the best time. I think maybe because of the change of schedule and it was all a bit chaotic, I actually weirdly felt quite relaxed, and the tournament there was great. I mean, it was all thanks to Jamie Baker for getting me a wild card over there. So we had a great week, and I think that match with Sloane gave me a lot of confidence. And even the next round, I lost against Andreescu, but it was a high-level match, and yeah, it set me up well, really, for the rest of the season.
You've had some good close matches against top players, including last year, Wimbledon first round, you took Monte Kostyuk to three sets. Do you prefer going into a match where you're a bit more of an underdog? Do you feel prepared for those kinds of matches?
Yeah, I like playing as an underdog, but you also have to deal with pressures of being expecting to win as well. I think those types of matches are great because you really just can try and just see where your level is at compared with those top players. And for me, what I've realised in the last year is I don't have to try and overplay against top girls. My level is right there with them anyway. And as long as I can stay fit and healthy and keep solid mentally and, you know, keep pushing day to day, I easily have the level to be playing there.
Yeah, we definitely saw that today and more recently as well. I don't want to keep you too much longer in the 30-degree heat.
Oh, is it 30
so,
now?
Yeah,
wow.
It's about there. It was 29 before, so I'm going to say we've hit it. You mentioned your brother before, Luke, so I want to ask, we saw your mum by the courts the other day, and she was saying that this is the first time in years that all four of you in the close family have been in the UK at the same time. What's it like having them here, first of all?
Yeah, so, well, we were all here a couple of months ago. My dad's actually not here at the moment. My brother went home a few days ago, but
oh, fair. They spoil the party.
Yeah,
quite
I know. But it's been so nice having my mum here this week. She was actually meant to fly home on Thursday, and then when I won and was still playing, she then changed it to Saturday. And then she was like, "Okay, I can't leave now. Like, now you're in the semis, so now she's pushed it back to Monday." So she's my good luck charm this week. So she definitely wasn't allowed to leave.
Yeah, good from her.
Yeah.
Luke also plays tennis at college. From what I've seen, I love the relationship you have and some of the online content you come out with. It's just brilliant.
Oh,
good. Yeah, good laughs.
Yeah.
How much do you guys talk about tennis, and how much are you an encouragement to each other on the respective journeys?
Honestly, we don't talk about tennis that much. I'm so proud of him for getting in the TCU team. You know, he hasn't played a lot of tennis in his life, and he just played in high school in America, but he just decided last year that he really wanted to push to try and be part of that TCU team, and it's incredible that he managed to get on the team, and they really think he's a big asset to them. So yeah, I'm so proud of him for doing that. And he helped me a lot last year when he traveled with me for the whole grass court season with Alex. And it's nice because he was supporting me so much within tennis, but then off the court we get along so well together that it's a lot of fun. And he's got this whole musical side to him as well, which is why all the TikToks are coming out. Everything is his idea. I'm going to throw that out there. But no, we have a lot of fun together.
That's awesome. Okay, last question. If you were to win tomorrow, or by the time this is released, the final will have been and done, how will that compare, if we're putting them on a ranking, to experience such as qualifying for Wimbledon a couple of years ago and winning a round in the main draw in 2018?
Oh, I'll have to tell you if I win, because I don't know. But for me, qualifying for Wimbledon was one of the best feelings I've ever had. I think it's so difficult to qualify for a slam. I don't think people really realise that. And for me, doing it at my home slam, coming through three really tough matches, it meant so much to me. But also winning tournaments is big as well, because you have to win five matches in a row. And I think this is I haven't won four matches in a row this year yet. So this is a really good week for me. And yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I'll let you know tomorrow.
For sure. Well, whatever happens from here, awesome start to the grass season, and love to see the level coming through for you. I know you've worked hard for it. So well done, Katie.
Thanks,
and all the best for the next few weeks.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Katie. It's always great to chat with her, and equally great to see the moves that she's starting to make. Okay, I'll bring this episode to a swift conclusion. Grass season week 2 of 6 is underway, and I'm commentating on the ATP Challenger Tour event in Nottingham for the BBC this week. That's where Andy Murray is the top seed once again. The official name of the event is the Rothesay Open Nottingham, and it's played alongside a WTA level event where Maria Sakkari, top 10 player, is the top seed. You can find live streams through the BBC iPlayer, Amazon Prime, and the LTA YouTube channel. And as always, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK, on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK, and myself on both platforms at Abigail Tennis. Thank you for listening. Take care, and I'll see you back here next week.